All right, after wishing everyone Shavua Tov, and I hope you don't have the same hangover that I have from poor last couple of days. Yeah, you have a worse one. Oh,
actually, I was rushing so fast I didn't get a chance to get drunk. I was trying to do a process of I have to rush to make to get that suit in and get it in time.
Well, this is if anybody wants to. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. I have the original. So. Okay. So what happened, Sam? You weren't there?
Rabbi Goldscheider is hugging the machine. He says, 1 minute.
I said, okay.
Rabbi Brazan.
Oh, okay.
She'll be over.
Excellent. Yeah, right. So what are we discussing? Let's just quickly review what we know so far. We have the following Chakira, which gives us a very interesting structure to analyze many, many different sugyas. We can talk about the concept of ptur. For example, osek b'mitzvah potur min ha-mitzvah. So you're busy with mitzvah A, and therefore you're potur from mitzvah B. We can talk about a case where yesh kof b'yad chachomim, the Torah says to do something, and then the chachom says don't do it. Like, for example, we gave two examples. We gave the example of the Torah says to take a beged, if you have a garment that's made of linen, and has four corners, the Torah says to put tzitzis on. And the Chacham come along and tell you, don't do that. The reason why the Chacham don't want you to do that is because we paskin what's called Laila Lavzman tzitzis, and therefore if you wear the same beged at night, because you forget to take it off at nightfall, then you violate the Issur Kelayim, because tzitzis by definition is tzemer, is made of wool, and the beged in this case is made of what? Of linen, of pishtan, so you're violating these circumstances. So the Chacham say, you know, look, the best idea in this case, in this scenario, is not to put tzitzis on the beged. So on the one hand, the Torah is telling you to put the tzitzis on the beged. On the other hand, the Chacham is saying, don't put the tzitzis on the beged. We have another example. In the case of Biarei Kanis, where you're not allowed to go into the Azor without a carbon. So you have a certain situation where, on the one hand, the Torah says, don't go into the Azor, and the Chacham are going to tell you, we'll see for various reasons, that you're allowed to go into the Azor even without the Karbon. So what we want to ask is, what happens when you're in this situation where you have a conflict, and the Torah says, you're potter. What does that mean, you're potter? So one way of saying it is, it means that's it. The chiv is gone completely. Forget about putting a tzitzis on a beged shel pishtan. Forget about picking up a second mitzvah if you're involved in the first mitzvah. That's called nullification. Nullification means the entire chiv is null and void. The other way of saying it, instead of calling it nullification, a whole different approach, is to say, put it into temporary suspension. Meaning right now, the mitzvah is suspended. What's the difference between saying that it's nullified, meaning that the chiyuv is completely batel, or to say, no, it's only suspended? I mean, it sounds like a play of words. You know, what's the difference between what?
That's not a play of words.
Right. So the difference is going to be, what happens in a situation where the original reason for nullification is gone? Okay, I'll give you again, just to get, you know, to give it a bit of
reality.
Of reality, right? A concrete example. Let's say, for example, the Torah says that if you take a shvua, and that shvua is on its var mitzvah, right? The shvua is on its var mitzvah. So, ein nishban al mitzvah. So, we have a rule, ein nishban al mitzvah. So, we can ask the following question. What does that mean? Does that mean that your shvua is totally null and void? Or does it mean that your shvua is temporarily being postponed? It's suspended. And then Afkamina is going to be, let's say that first shvuah of the Torah, meaning that first mitzvah the Torah commanded you, is gone. If you say that the Einish Bonal Mitzvahs means that the Shavuah is null and void, then the Shavuah never got off the ground. But if you say, no, the Shavuah is in suspension, it's kind of like behind the door, it's waiting to pounce upon you, then as soon as the first Shavuah, which is the Mitzvah of the Torah, is gone, then the second Shavuah is chal. Or, for example, if I say, I osik b'mitzvah potter b'mitzvah. So what am I saying? Am I saying that because I'm osik b'mitzvah, the second mitzvah is not even... is not generated, meaning it doesn't even begin, there's no chiyuv at all, or am I saying, no, there's a chiyuv, but right now you're preoccupied with mitzvah A, as soon as mitzvah A is completed, now you become obligated to mitzvah B. I can even go a step further. What happens if a osek b'mitzvah potter b'mitzvah, he decides, for whatever reason, that he wants to drop the first mitzvah in favor of the second mitzvah? Yeah, he likes the second mitzvah better than the first. So if I say that osik b'mitzvah nullifies the second mitzvah, then if he goes ahead and decides to fulfill the second one, that's just the reshus. And we're going to soon see the Ritva in Sukkah goes on and says that the second mitzvah is mamash reshus, because the Ritva is operating within the framework of nullification. That the osik b'mitzvah, part of the mitzvah, doesn't just mean temporarily apartheid, but it means it completely undermines the other chiyuv. And if it undermines the other chiyuv and neutralizes it, you're left with the reshus. And other rishonim are going to say, not like that. No, you know, right now the mitzvah is postponed, but you'll come around and you'll fulfill it when you get a chance. If you decide that you want to drop the first mitzvah, okay, you might be in violation of being mevatel the first mitzvah, but at least you're mevatel the second mitzvah. Whereas the Ritva says, no, the second mitzvah, as far as you're concerned, doesn't exist. There was no room for it to be chal. And all this is going to have a tremendous impact on the concept of onus. What's onus? So, for example, in the laws of tefillah, you can have two cases of onus. The first is a very extreme case, and the other is a little bit less extreme. The first case is Rachmana Litzlan an onin. So it means that he hasn't buried his dead yet. And the law is that an onin is potter mikol mitzvahs. He doesn't daven, he doesn't make brachas. It's a very, I don't know, I hope no one here has gone through it, but I can tell you I went through it three times. It's no picnic. Imagine eating and drinking without making brachas. It's mamish crazy. So what happens when the onen comes, let's say, Sunday morning, and he comes back from the Beis HaKvaros? Is he chayav in Avdolah? Because Motzi Shabbos he couldn't make Avdolah. Is he chayav in Tfilas Tashlumin from Mayriv? Obviously, the first thing he has to do is daven Shachar. That's for sure. If it's still time. But what about Tashlumin from Mayriv? So that's a very extreme case of onus. Then there's a less extreme case of onus, which is called Tzarche Tzibur. There are people who are in charge of, in a crisis situation, saving Klal Yisrael, or Pidyon Shvuyim. You know, they have to raise the funds, or go out on a trip and make sure that the governmental authorities will free a certain captive. Now they come back, too late to daven Mincha, time to daven Ma'ariv. Should they daven a Tfilas Tashlumin for Mincha? So once again, before again we see it inside, I just want to give you the introduction. The framework is, if I hold that in the case of onus, a person is potum in a mitzvah, means that the mitzvah is not chal, and he didn't have a chiyuv, then there's no room for tashlum. And tashlum means when I was obligated in a certain mitzvah, but I didn't have the opportunity to fulfill it, then I'm given a second opportunity, a makeup test. But if I was never obligated to begin with, then there's no tashlum. And this is going to be a question number one in the case of an onen. Is he chayav in tefilas tashlumin when he comes back from the burial of his dead? And this will be a question on someone who's no longer osek b'tzarchei tzibur. Baruch Hashem, it was a successful operation. They were pulled to the shevi, the shavui, I should say. And now, am I chayav in tefilas tashlumin now that I have free time to daven? If I'm going to argue that onus is just a temporary suspension, but I'm really chayav, okay, it's like a person who was prevented from fulfilling a mitzvah tefillah. He has another option. He's got the fallback position called tashlumin. But if I'm going to go far, and I'm going to use the nullification approach, and I'm going to suggest that now, since he's an onus, there is no chiyuv at all, then he's not chayiv in tashlumin. Clear?
Yes.
Now this takes us even further. We have halacha called mesu achiv machmas mila. I think in modern terminology we call it hemophilia, whatever it is, a blood disease. So what happened was that Rachmana Litzlan, a person had three sons, right? Not triplets, I mean to say. So they did the mila on the first son and he died. They did the mila on the second son, he died too. So the third one is potter from mila. We don't do mila on the third one. Now the question becomes, can he eat from the Korban Pesach? The halacha is that an orel lo yochel bo. So if he's an orel, he has arlus, there was no mila, is he allowed to eat from the Korban Pesach? So if kind of say that mesu ochiv machmas echov machmas mila is therefore there's no mitzvah of mila incumbent upon him at all, that's what I call nullification, otherwise known as bitul or akira. If it's an akira sachiu, then he's not an orel. An orel is someone who is obligated to mila and didn't fulfill his obligation. For example, let's say a Kohen has a boy, a baby boy. Is he allowed to be sach b'shemen shel truma on this baby boy before the boy is eight days old? So if you're going to say that the Torah imposed the chiyuv of mila immediately with the child's birth, the Torah sort of postponed it until the eighth day, which is not true, by the way, I'm just saying in pure theory, then it could be that he's an RL. The child is an RL until he has mila. But if on the other hand I'm going to say that an RL is a result of non-fulfillment of your chiyuv, and there was never a chiyuv until the eighth day, so the chiyuv mitzvah emerges first on the eighth day, then he's not an RL. And therefore, sach as b'no, you know, b'no akotin kodim yom shmidim. Now, even if I'm going to argue that in the case of a katan before the eighth day, he's not obligated in mila, it's the shame arlus only emerges with the eighth day, that doesn't necessarily tell me anything about the case of mesu achiv machmas hamila. The case of mesu achiv machmas hamila, if we were subjecting him to mila, he would die, chas v'shalom. It's a pikuach nefesh situation, he might die. So that's not saying that he's not chayev. What we're saying is that he has no possibility of fulfilling his chiyuv, but he might be an orel. And you know, this hakira applies even to the Rachmana Litzlan, a person has no arm. So is he chayev in tefillin? But he's anus, so he has a din of an anus. So no, he's not chayev at all. So again, this hakira is one of nullification versus suspension.
Simple application might just be Isaac Mitzvah and he does the mitzvah anyway.
Correct.
Manages to do both. Not his suspense.
Correct. If he manages to do both, has he fulfilled the second mitzvah? If we're saying that he's part of the second mitzvah, then as the Ritva says, and also commits part of the mitzvah, it's a Dvar Rishos. Okay.
Obviously, if he accomplished it, he shouldn't have been bothered.
Well, that depends on a different machlokas, which we're not going to get into now. There's one sheet that says Osik permits a potu mitzvah means that his askus itself makes him potu, and others say no, it's the fact that he efshel kaim shneim, he can't do both at the same time. But there is one sheet that says that once you're Osik permitsah, even if you could be makayim the second, so if you have tefillin al rosho, that's not called Osik permitsah. But if you're, let's say, involved actively in a mitzvah, even if
you're coming back.
Right, and even though I can do another mitzvah at the same time, I'm potter. That's really fascinating unto itself. But what Rabbi Bosa, what I had prepared for today is that we would work through these sources together inside. So I don't know if you know, it's a little embarrassing for me because I wanted to go through this inside with you. I don't know. I can try to keep you entertained for an hour, but that's not really my purpose. My purpose is that, you know, that we, that, so I was stalling as much as I could, but you know, after a while I ran out of. Okay. So hopefully Sam will get access to the photocopy machine. I had given this out last week. But, you know, from one week to the other, we have different faces, and And then we have people who don't want to look into the text. It's hard for me to. You know what I mean? No, I didn't mean that. I meant to say, just a pedagogical challenge to try to satisfy everyone. My wife says that that all my shirim should be without a text. And that's like minakotza la kotza from what I'm trained to do, So there are people, I think, Rav Asher Zelig Weiss has no text in front of him, and Rav Ozer from Itri, and Rav, what's his name, Rav Shlomo Fischer. Have you ever seen Rav Shlomo Fischer?
No.
Yeah, I mean, he'll quote verbatim, Rishonim that you and I never heard of, Bal Peh, without any note in front of him, If you asked the Rav on what daf we were holding, he probably wouldn't know. Yeah, he wasn't sensitive to memorize the daf. That wasn't his thing.
No, but that's not what he did. He didn't have any text there. He used to tell Aaron to get up. He said, Aaron, tell him what the problem is.
Okay.
He would stand up and say the whole thing.
He fell, my
father. Yeah.
Okay.
They say about Rav Chaim Shulevitz that they didn't have a copy in Shanghai. They didn't have a copy of the Shem Shmaita, so he just sat down and wrote the Shem Shmaita out of memory. Okay, but so there are people who can do that. I admit my limitations. I can't fit into that category. All right. So if you're looking for a moment here on a page that says Kuf Nun Aleph, which should be on the left side. Of that, So he has here Rabbi Chanan. Rabbi Chanan has a very fascinating analysis of a Gemara in Yevamos Daf Tzadi Amud Beis. The Gemara says that the reason why Chachamim have the authority to tell you not to put tzitzis on this Begad Shel Pishtan is because it's Shevi Al Taseh. In other words, the Chachamim did not have the authority to tell you to eat chametz on Pesach. No way, no how. Or to eat nevela and trefa. What they can do is they can tell you not to blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Not to put tzitzis on this day. That's called Shevi Al Taseh. So far, so good. Comes along Rabbi Chanan, and he offers two interpretations, very profound, to what this means to differentiate between Kumva Seh and Shevi Al Taseh. And he says the following. One interpretation is to say that there are two types or categories of mitzvos or losases. One is chamur and one is relatively kal. How do I know what is my barometer to gauge a mitzvah? And categorize it. Is it a mitzvah kala or is it a mitzvah chamur? Is it relatively light or is it relatively harsh or strict? And we know that there are many different ways of evaluating. You have mitzvahs esei versus mitzvahs losas. You might have an esei sheyesh bo kares. You have a lotas sheyesh bo kares. You have a lotas sheyesh bo malkus. There are many different systems and barometers by which we can try to gauge, even though again the Mishnah says in Amos have mitzvah. That's not my point. Kal and chamura in this context means when we have a conflict and we have to know which one has to give way to the other. So you can't hide behind the Mishnah in Amos and say, well, I have to be zor to mitzvah kalak and machamura. So Rav Chanan offers the following possibility. That yesh koch biad chachamim lakar dafim in a Torah, but only in a mitzvah kala or an avera kala, but not an avera chamur. How do I know? At what point do I say, well, this is transcended beyond kala and it's into the level of chamura? If it's kuvase, if the rabbanon are going to tell you to actively violate a lotasa, for example, that's called an avera chamura, and that power they don't have. If it's an avera kala, again, you and I might say, well, what do you mean not blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah? What makes that a lightweight kind of mitzvah? But the answer is, it doesn't mean that you're actively rebelling against the king, if I can use that term. Then Rav Elchanan says a whole other pshat. Put that all into storage, into back of the back burners. Rav Elchanan says the difference between Kuvasei and Shevi Altas is the following. The Torah tells you to do something, and the Chacham say do the opposite. And you are basically in a situation of equality, of Shavah B'Shavah. We cannot decide what to do. They're both equal. So what do you do when you don't know what to do?
Sure, you got this.
Exactly, you do nothing. So it doesn't mean that the Chachamim don't have the koach to be oker a mitzvah, lakor dovin Torah b'kuvah. Say they do have that koach. But since the Torah tells you to do otherwise, you're in a quandary and you have to do nothing. And by doing nothing, you're basically juggling, if you will, between two principles or two ethical positive values, and you don't know how to, in such a situation, you don't know how to what's the word, navigate through this conflict. So therefore, just drop the ball. Shevi Altas. You cannot actively violate one on behalf of the other.
So you're saying it's not that they have a koyach to be oikir, they have a koyach to put in another chiyuv over here which contradicts it.
Exactly.
Because if they have a koyach to be oikir, then you go just for the chachamim.
Correct. And therefore, Rebbe Chanan is suggesting in the second shot what I call suspension and not nullification. Rebbe Chanan is now saying that Chachamim were never granted the authority to nullify the Torah. What they can do is they can put you into a quandary, because now you have A against B, and they both weigh the same amount. So what you do is you do nothing.
Okay. Well, what about it seems to me that only applies in the case where the gzera of the Rabbanan would only be permanent.
Exactly. Oh, permanent, I don't know. Wait, I'm not up to that yet, Alan. Maybe you're ahead of me. But before you get to permanent, what are the Rabbanan telling me? Forget about permanence. Leave that for a time being. Are they telling me to do nothing? Or are they telling me to actively violate the Torah? Let's take the case of Kilayim, right? They're telling you you have a Beged Shel Pishta.
Right.
They don't want you at any cost to put tzitzis of tzemer on this Beged and wear the Beged. So what are they telling you? Are they telling you to wear the Beged Shel Pishta and leave out the tzitzis, or they tell you don't wear a Beged Shel Pishtan? Again, I'm only talking about Dalek, right, if it has Dalek conscience.
Right.
We're not totally outlawing every linen garment. But if you have a linen garment that has four corners to it, what are the Rabbanan saying? They don't want you to put tzitzis on the Beged. So what are they saying to you? Are they saying to you don't wear the Beged? Or are they saying wear the Beged
without tzitzis?
And it all depends on the two studim, the two definitions of Rebbe Elchanan. Let's go through. If the Chachamim, according to the first definition of Rebbe Elchanan, have the power to override the Torah law, but only if we're dealing with a Shevi Altas, because then it becomes Kala, not Chamura, then they can tell you to wear the Beged. But if, on the other hand, all they can do is create a conflict, and then you have to decide Shevi Altas, I mean, you can't do anything active to tip the scale in either direction, then don't wear the Beged at all. Is that clear?
Yeah, right. But like in the case of Cohen, they'd have to say wear the Beged, because otherwise they would possible them for doing any avodah.
All right. So I don't know about a Cohen. I can't think about Cohen now. I just got to... Again, this is a very profound sugya for me. Maybe for you it's very simple, but for me it's very profound.
Here,
let's take the case of going into the Azor without a karbon. So if I define Shevi Altas by the Aver itself, so this is an Aver b'Shevi Altas, because what does it mean? That I'm not allowed to be in the Azor without a karbon. That's called Reikam. But if, on the other hand, what the Rabbanan are doing is they just simply giving you a conflict situation by telling you, I don't want you to go in, I don't want you to bring the karbon, then by entering into the Azara, you have actively decided to tip the scale, to prefer the Chachamim over the Din Torah. Take a look at the paragraph here on the top left of Kufnun Aleph. He says the following. Chokar Od Be'inyan Apirishal Kumva Seve Sheve Altase. Right? We established in the Gemara Yevamos that the Chachom have a power only B'Sheve Altase to be Oker Domino. Ha'ima Kumva Se Toli Begufa Isur. Do I define and categorize the Isur itself that the Chachom are now trying to be Oker as either A or B, as either Kumva Se or Sheve Altase? Or perhaps be ofen she'over ala yisur, in the manner in which he implements him. He gives an example. He says, like re'ias ponim bazara reikam. He says the gufa yisur, if you define the yisur in abstract terms and you classify it shevi altase, and if the chacham should have the ability to tell you, go into the azara, and you're violating an yisur of a shevi altase. Okay. Aval, if on the other hand we're going on the ofensha over all of, in other words, the way, not the abstract definition, if you see, I wrote my own little notes on the side, but rather the way you implement it, then you have to go into the Azara now without the Karvan. And by going into the Azara, you're doing a Kumvaseh. Nobody gave you the right to do a Kumvaseh. The Chacham never were empowered to give you a Kumvaseh. They can only tell you Shevi Altas, and don't blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it coincides with Shabbos. Okay, now we get to the Shvua case. And then, Alan, if we have time, we'll talk about the Kohen. But I'm not ready for the Kohen yet. Ulehepach, he says, let's go the opposite. Shvua shalo ochal zu hayom. Oh, this is really fascinating. I'm telling you, Rebbe Chanan had such a deep mind that you have to sweat it out to understand his logic. He says, let's take the case of a person says, okay, he has two loaves of bread in front of him on the table. We'll call one A and we'll call one B. So he takes a shvua that he won't eat kikar A today if he doesn't eat kikar B tomorrow. Okay, let's go over that one more time. He enjoins himself from eating this kikar today if he goes ahead and eats this kikar, the other kikar, tomorrow. Okay.
You're right.
Okay, so I if I don't eat the second kikar tomorrow, then I'm enjoined from eating the first kikar today. Okay? Now what happens? Ochal ha'iser hayom. Now he's in trouble. He's got to eat the second kikar tomorrow. Correct? Because if he doesn't eat the second kikar tomorrow, then he's violating the shvu of eating this kikar today. So, ochal ha'israyom, v'lo ochal ha'tnai l'mochar. And he didn't eat it. He says, Rabbi Chanan, that gufa iser hu kuva se, but v'avar alav al yidei shevi altas. Rabbi Chanan wants to give us an example where if I define the iser itself is b'kuva se. Right, because what did he say? He says shvur shlo ochal, which means that the achil itself is the nature of the iser. But how does he violate the iser by sitting for 24 hours passively on the second day l'machar without eating the kika? So again, Rabbi Chanan is using this as an illustration of his distinction between the guf avera and the ofen ha avera, the aver per se in classification, and the way in which you violate the affair.
He's using an artificial example.
Yes.
A self-invented example rather than a real Metzias. Right.
Well, when you say it's not a real Metzias,
you create this strange wording.
Right. It could be a Metzias, but I think he's using it to demonstrate his point.
Okay.
Yes.
So now, let's go back to Aleph. Okay, and I think now we're ready to understand Aleph. He says the following. We have the Sugin Yevamos, correct? Yesh kol piyat chachomim, lako dominator b'shevi altas. Okay. He says the following. Do the chachomim have the ability, again, only with regard to certain averos, to be oker dov min haTorah and nullify the dov min haTorah? Mei ikaro, he calls it. Okrim es adin doraisa mei ikaro. Again, this is not carte blanche. As I told you before, the Vela they can't do that. But where they can do so, like in tzitzis or in shofar that we mentioned before, that's called a total akira. Is then kuvasei hu davar chamur, if it's something that require, you know, that the nature of the avera is such that it's kuvasei, that's called a serious chamur avera. V'yein koach biat chom liokva. So if we compare these two averas, one to the other, he says like following: Is lefitzad zeh achilu toli b'madregas chomer ha'iser? The rabbanon are not given authority or control over something that has a darga chamura. It's a kuvase, and therefore they're completely cut out. Aval lefitzad hasheni. You could say a different definition, that din Torah bimkomo omen. The Chachamim were never granted the authority to be oker, a dogman of Torah, completely nullified. Just that you're in trouble now, because on the one hand the Torah tells you X, and now the Torah tells you listen to the Chachamim who say Y, the exact opposite. So then what's the difference between Kuvase and Shevi Altas? Because now, even in the case of Shevi Altas, the Chachamim are not really being oker, dogman of Torah. Yes, the answer is hachiluk hu b'derech acheres. Now we have to understand the difference between kuvase and shevi altas in a different way, and therefore it is the din Torah tells you to do one thing, and the mitzvah shvol and derech hachom the Torah authorized the chachom and they say something else. So what do you do in this case? Yeshlo shnei dinim asosrim zeh is therefore what does he do? Adif shalol asos shum davar. He should do nothing. He should be shevi altas. And on the side here, I added my own little note that this is the way Reb Chaim, in the beginning of the Sefer, and I review this because I think it's kedai to review this over and over again, Reb Chaim understands that the din of Gili Arayis, of Yehari Val Yavar, we have on the one hand, V'chai Bohem, V'loshi Yomas Bohem, on the other hand, we have an Iser Gili Arayis. What happens in such a case? So let's say, for example, a Jewish woman at gunpoint, a married woman, is being forced to have submit herself to a relationship with a man. So the law is that, anybody know?
Yeah, she's talking about what she's
doing. And therefore what?
She
submits herself. She's allowed to submit herself. Well, what happened to Gili Arayis? We said over and over again that Gili Arayis is one of the big three, and Halacha requires that you give up your life. There's no V'chaimah. So V'chaimah says, name. The din is V'chaimah. But Gili Arayis is equal to V'chaimahem. That's how Reb Chaim understood it. In other words, the Torah elevated Gili Arayis and its severity to be shavel le nefesh ha'adam. It's normally we say the aver is less than nefesh ha'adam. V'chaimahem v'lo shiyomas v'hem. Here the Torah doesn't take a stand on it. And the Torah doesn't take a stand on it, then you're stuck with shnei dinim ha'shavim v'sosrim zetze. So what do you do in this case? You do nothing. So Reb Chaim therefore comes to the conclusion that they put the gun to your head and they say, allow us to throw you onto a baby or we'll kill you. You're allowed to be thrown onto the baby. And this incurs the wrath of the Chazon Ish. I mean, he gets very upset about this, Reb Chaim. Why? Because the Gemara applies the principle in Esther of Karka Olam. And the Gemara says that Esther was permitted, even according to the Mani Omar of Yikhalo Labayas, now, Tikri Labas Alabayas, that she was allowed to submit herself to Ahasuerus, and that's called Karka Olam. So Reb Chaim understands, so what's Karka Olam? Do nothing. What would mean, according to Reb Chaim, I don't know, don't ask me this question, if the gun was at her head, she'd have to go from this room to that room, I'm not sure. Or is it maybe it's only a din in the Aver per se that she was passive? I don't know. You have to really think this out. There's a Me'iri on this in Sanhedrin, very profound thinking. But what comes out here is, if we use the paradigm of Reb Chaim of Gili Arayis, let's say a man would be passive. I mean, it's hard to talk about this publicly, but there is a case where he's Muksha V'Omen. You know, he was about to have a relationship with his wife, and then they got this whole... You know, sometimes these situations don't exist in reality, but Chachamim use it to try to to try to teach, you know, the conceptual principles of Torah. But in any event, the ultimate thing, we're not differentiating between a man and a woman over here. This has nothing to do with that. It has to do with Shevi Altesa versus Kuvasa. You have to be Shevi Altesa because you're in a quandary. Rabbi Chanan, again, he doesn't quote Rabbi Chaim, but I think he's using Rabbi Chaim as a paradigm to understand what does it mean, Yesh Koch V'yad Chachomim Lakar Dovin HaTorah V'Shevi Altesa. The Chachomim don't have the power to nullify the Torah law. That was never granted. They can just confuse you. And now that you're confused, what do? Shevi Altas.
But the example you gave of forcing the... I'm sorry. The example you gave of forcing the woman to go from one room to the other will depend on his question whether you're either the Yisr B'kum Basay or you're doing something B'kum Basay.
Correct. Correct. In other words, if the Aver itself is even B'Shev Altas, when Nichrasu Anafashas also says no difference between a man and a woman, even though as far as she's concerned the Aver is B'Shev, it gets complicated because it could be that the Nichrasu Anafashas also means that the Torah has made her act, her non-action into an action, but we'll leave that out for a second. But if on the other hand it's a din in the ofen, as Sam points out, in the ofen akiyum, then she's now moving from one room to the other. But even so, I'm not sure if that would have any implication. Delia, you want to say something? But now we're ready for the kohen.
Well, before we get to the kohen, I just want to clarify this: the v'chayim him. What does Chazal understand v'chayim him? You see an example, if he puts a gun to her head and says, you know, you submit or else. What if he puts a gun to her husband's head and says, tell the wife, submit or I'll shoot him? Is that a b'chai b'hem or is that not b'chai b'hem?
It's pikuach nefesh, it's not
b'chai b'hem. All right, well, let's say, you want to know if, let's say, there's someone else. I don't think there are b'chai b'hem addresses that question. I can just tell you what, you know, intuitively what I would say. Can you say Karika Olam in order to save someone else's life? Logically, I didn't think this out. It's not relevant to have discussion today, but I would say, what difference does it make? Yeah. Because Chaiwa means that I'm weighing human life or a Jewish life, gets complicated, but Jewish life. Versus the Avim.
Yeah, because you can see from Nicholas Esther, that was the B'chai Avim. That's what she was. It was not a matter of saving herself so much as of saving.
Aniva Ami. It says Aniva Ami.
Yeah,
Aniva. She would have gone under too.
All right, let's get to the Kohen question if you don't mind.
Yeah.
The question is Chazal say, because they're worried that the Kohen will wear the Avnate, which is Shatnez, after he finishes the Avoda, and therefore he'll be over. And so they say, don't wear the Avnate. But if you say don't wear the Avnate, then he can never be Mekayim the mitzvah of Shemesh
Babayah. Right, so it could be that Yeshkoch V'yad Chachom and Lakadom and Torah is only on a one-time basis.
That's what he was asking.
Yes, like Shabbos sometimes coincides with Rosh Hashanah, but I don't know if they can be Oker the mitzvah of Shofar completely. I don't know.
That's exactly the point of my question. It can't be continuous always forever that way.
Right, so for that we'd have to learn the Sugya Yevamos. But again, we're using this Rebbe Chanan as a pedagogic tool, so to speak. We're not, you know, unfortunately we don't have the time now to learn Masechta Yevamos, and if we did, this would be a wonderful place to start.
You know, Shabbos is a whole concept you have to know.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The whole concept of, are we able to nullify something, or are we just putting it, as I call it, into suspended animation? That becomes brilliantly demonstrated by this Rebbe Chanan, because Rebbe Chanan is saying, I'm not sure that the Chacham really have a call to be Oker Dovin HaTorah. Maybe they can just confuse us and create a Shabbat
B'Shabbat. Set up a conflict. Don't say confused. Set up a conflict.
A conflict. Great. Okay, I needed the language. That's what you're here for, Sam, to give you the language, you know.
That's what they...
But the other side, Reb Chaim, is in Reb Chaim is Faket, that the Rabbanim really have a koach to undermine the Torah law, but only if it's a kind of a losis and it's categorized with B'guf HaYisur as a Shevi Altas Yisur, then it's not an Yisur Chomu. Okay, let's see if we can get out of Kuf Nun Beis for a second. Okay, let's fast forward for the time being to the end of Kuf Nun Beis, going on to Kuf Nun Gimel. That's called Ptur Onus. You have that? Okay. So he starts with the Machlokas between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam in a few places in Shas about an Orel Shemesu Echov Machmas Mil. And he says the following. Rashi says, Kohen Orel Shemesu Echov Machmas Mila is, as a result, he is called an Orel and he cannot eat Truma. Why? Because Lamaisa, he's not Gemalt, correct? Tosus Yishonim there in Masechet Yevamos again says, Pishakun Shcholmokom Orel Shemesu Echov Machmas Mila. V'lo nireh. The Tosfos Yeshanim says about Rashi, lo nireh. Why? Diyam kein, meaning if his brothers died, eino mitzuva lamula. I would underline those three words. Eino mitzuva lamula. Pirish lamulas atzmo. In other words, even when he matures, and he says, havi kemo mila shalo bizmana. So again, follow the logic of the Tosfos Yeshanim. Mesu Echov Machmas Mila equals a child below the age of 8. Rashi says not. Rashi says that Mesu Echov Machmas Mila, he's an Orel. V'kasha, the Gemara boy, Orel Katan Mahu Lasucho B'Shemen Shal Truma. Orel Shalom B'Zman Ma'keves Olome Akfo. Now, the Gemara seems to vacillate back and forth on this question, whether or not there's a din of Arlus, Shalom B'Zman Mila, meaning before the Zman of Mila. V'amaylo Poshet Mimas Nisan, why didn't the Gemara have a proof from the case of Mesu Echov Machmas Mila? If Rashi holds that Mesu Echov Machmas Mila, he's an Arl, he can't eat Truma, so the Gemara should have applied the same logic by analogy to the case of Mila Shalom Bismana. The answer is that Mesu Echov Machmas HaMila, he's not Chayav in Mila at all. And since he's not Chayav in Mila, he doesn't have the status of an Orel. And Rashi is incorrect. Nochmal, let's go over the logic. When the Gemara vacillates back and forth about Mila Shalom Bismana, according to Rashi, the Gemara could have illustrated this with a perfect example from the case of Mesu Echov Machmas Mila. Because in Mesu Echov Machmas Mila, Rashi insists that he's an Orel. So the same thing should apply to a child before he reaches the Zman of Mila. That's the objection of Tosfos Yeshanim. And based on this Tosfos Yeshanim, he wants to insist that no, Mesu Echov Machmas Mila is not chayav in the midst of Mila, and therefore he's not an Orel. So if you fast forward down to Kuf Nun Gimel, the first major paragraph, he says that Rashi and Rabbeinu and the Tosfos Yeshanim are arguing about this very chakira that we're talking about, you know, nullification versus suspension. He says the following: according to Rashi, Eino chayev l'kayim es ha-mitzvah. In other words, he doesn't implement the mitzvah. Why? Because of pikuach nefesh. Amal achiyuv nishar bimkomo. Is therefore, if the chiyuv is nishar b'mkomo, a dayin orel hu. In other words, what generates orlus? The fact that he's chayav in the mitzvah mila. No, not that he's an orel. Again, you're going to see in a minute that according to Tosfos Yeshanim, he's not considered an orel. But the Tosfos Yeshanim is going to say he's not considered an orel because he has no chiyuv mila. Orlus is a result of EQ mitzvah mila. Rashi holds that that's exactly the case of Meso Echov Machmas Mila. You want to know when he becomes an Orel? A child may become an Orel at the eighth day because the mitzvah Mila never emerges until the eighth day. That's one thing. But don't connect that, says Rashi, to the case of Meso Echov Machmas Mila. He's a mature person and he's an Orel physically. Says Rashi, but you have to ask yourself a different question. Plus, is he Chayav in the mitzvah Mila? And Rashi holds that he is Chayav in the mitzvah Mila. And therefore he's an Orel. So he's also the Truma, the Avoda, Machilas HaPesach, etc. Avol the Rabbeinu Tam agrees with the Tosfos Yeshanim, is ones mevatel etzem achiv. It's an oker, it's a bittel. It's not just a temporary, oh, don't implement the chiv, but the chiv is like an albatross hovering over your head, around your head. L'chein beisuach machmas hamil lo chashiv or el klal. So what is Arlos? It's not a physical, biological existing thing. It's totally in the Chiyuv Mila. So there's Machlokas now in the case of a Pikuach Nefesh. Is he Chayav Mila, is it not? By the way, intuitively, where are you? I'm just wondering. I'm just curious if anyone agrees with me intuitively. Or...
with which way?
Yeah, I'm just saying. I'm not asking for a Raya or a Lovelace, but I'm just saying, just Hargosh Zalev, who's right over here? Does anybody agree with
you? You say Hargosh Zalev, so you're going for Tessie Shannon, but some of us don't have
Zalev. Oh, I think we can pass.
Yeah, I just think that Tessie Shannon here, Rabbi Natan,
in terms of fairness.
Yeah, because how can you tell me that he's chayim in the midst of Mila, but he can't implement the Mila?
Well, yeah, that's right.
No, Rabosai. No. What is a chiyuv?
I understand.
You understand, a chiyuv is not something abstract. A chiyuv means go ahead and do the following. The Torah can't say you're obligated, but don't do the following. So what the obligation becomes a null set. You know, to create a chiyuv, there's got to be some. You know, the lawyers used to say to cut ice. It's got to have some nafkavita. If it doesn't have nafkavita, call it a chiyuv. Part of the expression is this: it tells a chakira. It tells, they would say, you're chayav, but don't do it. You know, but I don't come from
it's
tell.
A metaphysical inadequacy.
That one I have to write down.
That is, but conceptually,
what is metaphysical?
Now, something is not shalom. Something is wrong with the person, but we can't be chayav to do it.
Sam, you got me on this one. This one is way beyond my comprehension.
Because,
and I have my master's in philosophy, but this one.
The Torah does have instances just like that where it's not positive. You can be a bleeding heart all you want. This is Gornish tells you. Somebody's born a mamzer, he's born a mamzer. That's the end of it.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not arguing with you on an emotional level. I'm saying you can't call something a chiyuv. You want to tell me someone's puzzle, and through no guilt of his own. You know, you want to tell me that Shaul should have killed the children of Amalek, and you know, you're bleeding on liberals and say why? And that's exactly what Shaul said. The Gemara Yuma says in Gdolim Chatu, Ktanim Chatu, right? So I'm not far from the mark over here. Right. But that's not what I'm talking about.
You're objecting the concept of chiyuv. Chiyuv means you should do it.
Correct.
You shouldn't.
Can the Torah say out of one side of its mouth you're obligated, and on the other side of the mouth don't you dare even dream of fulfilling that obligation? That's what I can't understand on a conceptual level. That's a steer in a bit. Okay, so what does this have to do with Tashlumin and Tefillah? This is the beautiful part. This is a Taz. Okay, what happens in our Chaim Simon Kuf Ches? We're talking about Nebuch and Onan. So he couldn't make Havdalah on Motzi Shabbos. He lost his relative on Shabbos. The burial will take place on Sunday morning. You know, here in this country, or at least in Yerushalayim, they'll bury it in the middle of the night. I mean, my father was buried at, I think, 2 in the morning.
Not if you were Shmuel Orbach.
They waited till the next day. But I guess I'm not on that madriga, so... But eventually all the family members were here. It was, you know, it's just... It's not so convenient, you know, but... fine. So now, they're burying the dead in the morning. So we have a couple of questions here. One is a Havdalah question, another is a Tashlumin question. Okay. So it says in Yoredeya, and that's what the Taz quotes in Arachayim, that because the Taz in Arachayim wants to deal with a different issue, not an Avelus issue. So he refers you to the Drisha in Yoredeya. What does the Drisha in Yoredeya talk about? The case of an Onei. That's where Avelus is. In your day. So what happens? So the halacha is, everybody knows this? How many Shmoneh Esrei of Shacharis does the Onei daven when he comes back to the Beis HaKfaris on Sunday morning?
One.
Only one. Everybody knows that. Less man de polen. What's the Taz's issue? The Drisha took that case of Onei and he made a leap of faith. He says, Mikano Yenira, this is the Lush of the Drisha. I forgot the Drisha's name, I used to know. He lived about 3 centuries ago, I think. More than. He says, Tehu Adin Misasek Vitzarche Tzibu. Kayotzev is this. So during the Zman of Tefillah, the entire owner of Tefillah, he was busy dedicating himself to Tzarche Tzibu. Potavi Lispalis Pal. He doesn't have to daven in Tefillah's Tashlum. So basically, what happened is, that the Drisha took the case of Onen in Yoredeya and applied it to a Seif in Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim about Osek B'Tzorchei Tzib. And the Shulchan Aruch paskens in Aruch Chaim that an Osek B'Tzorchei Tzib is part of an Atfilah. Comes along the Drisha, he says, what does that mean he's part of an Atfilah? Even when he gets his chance to daven, when he finally finishes the job, he does not daven at Tfilas Tashlum. And this incurs the wrath of the Taz. The Taz says the following. He says that the Drisha holds a kolshu onus, mikri potem itfilo. He says, according to the Drisha, he dramatized this. Toma aniyim yotze dvarim elu mipios et tzadik. You've heard that kind of phrase. You know, how could such a tzadik say such a thing? That kolshu. Kolshu onus mikri potter mitfila. He says, no. If you look in Aruch Chaim, the Aruch Chaim says that im nenas, if a person was in an onus situation, is mispal shtayim. How is the Drisha going to fit his understanding into the language of the Shulchan Aruch? Again, it could be that the Drisha was not happy with the Shulchan Aruch, but this is a pretty fundamental halach that comes from the sugyas and brachas, that a person who couldn't daven has to make up the davening when he gets a chance. And the language is ones. So therefore, osik b'tzorchei tzibur is ones, and therefore he cannot, he's chayav and feels tashlumen according to the Drisha. No.
It's going to be right. Poshet is also in tashlumen.
Ah. No. Poshet doesn't have tashlumen.
He doesn't have tashlumen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's going to be ones.
Yeah. So he's onus. So onus, that's exactly where the halach of tashlumen comes in, when a person is onus. Correct? So, how can you go ahead and tell me that this guy is an onus and he's part of mitfils tashlumen? Vesui says, the cause of the Torah's bias, he quotes the Rashba, Misha Yatorin Etzel, Etzel Apokid Machmas Chov, Lo Yocholi Potter, Achakach, Behav Sid Momet, Tokach Oversman Tfilah, to Mikri Onus, Avagav Machmas Momenu. So he was honest because he would lose a certain financial loss, and therefore he couldn't daven. And now you're going to tell me what he's Potter from Tfilah because he's an honest?
You sure it's Achakach?
Yeah, I think this is a mistake. It should be Acherkach. That's what I think. Right? Any Yocheli Potter Acherkach.
He can't get out of there only with the loss of a lot of money.
So,
okay, I don't have the curtains for this now, Sam. So
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No, it's okay. You're right. I'm wrong. I'm just saying. You know, it's just So let's fast forward to Menira. Do you have that on the left column? He says, "Atas sover shaones adai mikra bar chiyuva," and therefore, if he cannot be mekayim his chiyuv, then he's included under the category of tashlumen. Mishenenes will aspal tefilah bezmanach, I will aspal tefilah shtarim b'toras tashlumen afal pi. He admits that imi oyer potel legamrei. What's his paradigm in the case where he's potel legamrei? An onen, right? An onen is part of the gamre. There's an onen is a gavra lav bar tashlumen. There's an overlap here for another chakira that we very often ask. Whether the difference between maisa and gavra, you remember? So he's wondering about an ones. I'm sorry, starting again. He's worrying about an onen. What's the din of an onen? Are we saying that he doesn't have to do the maisa tefillah? Or are we saying that he's a gavra lav bar chiyuva?
Right.
And the Taz is agreeing that the onen is a gavra la bar chiyuva. But if someone is in a particular circumstance where he cannot fulfill the mitzvah because he's busy with osek b'tzorchei tzibur, that already is not a gavra bar. He's not a mufka for being a gavra bar chiyuva. He is a gavra bar chiyuva. Aval adrisha sover the ones eno bar chiyuva. That any case of an ones is mafkia his status as a bar chiyuva. If he's not a bar chiyuva, then there's no chiyuv tashlum. So it means it comes out according to the Drisha, the only case in which there's a chiyuv tashlum is where, you know, I was on my way and I tripped and I fell, you know, so I didn't get a chance to do the mitzvah. I couldn't daven because I was in a chas shalom in a hospital, you know, I was going through, tipulim refuyim. Although again, if it was a pikuach nefesh situation, then we might go back to the machlokas shin Rashi remained in time about Mesu after echo machlas mila. But let's say it wasn't pikuach nefesh. Okay. Now here he has a fascinating discussion about whether you're chayav kares if you didn't bring not only Pesach Rishon, but you didn't avail yourself of the possibility of Pesach Sheni, are you chayiv karis? So he has a Rambam. Where is this Rambam? Pirush HaMishnayos, Psachim Perek Zayin. Okay. Now here's the deal. If a person in Pesach Rishon, I meant to say Perek Tes. If a person in Pesach Rishon was a Tomei or the Derech Rechoka, then the Torah gives him the opportunity of bringing a Pesach Sheni. If he failed to live up to that opportunity, then the Rambam says Eino Chayev Karts. We'll see the explanation in just a minute. First, I want to get the facts on the ground. But if, on the other hand, it was not a case of Tomei B'derech Rechoka, then the Rambam says that he has only one opportunity to save himself from kares, and that's if he brings Pesach Sheni. But if he decides, let's say deliberately, not to bring Pesach Sheni, he's chayav kares. So let's see the details. Now, that's just in abstract terms. The Rambam writes the following. Yesh hevdil bein mi sheniftar milasos haPesach HaRishon machmas hayatamim derech rechoka bein mi shenenas beonis lo yochel lasos harishon. So again, the first case is he's tamei derech rechoka. The second, and that's why he didn't bring Pesach Rishon. The second case is he was laid up, you know, with a broken leg, and he couldn't bring the Pesach. But he was the derech krova, and he was not tamei. He was tam. Says the Rambam, if he was tamei derech rechoka in the Pesach Rishon, then if he violates Pesach Sheni b'mezid, he's not chayv karis. Hell of a chiddush. I mean, you would say that after them, what the Torah is up. I mean, this is what the Torah is talking about. Bring a Pesach Sheni because he didn't bring a Pesach Rishon. No, Ram says no. Avolisha nenas bionis lo yochel asa Rishon, and then he deliberately does not bring the Pesach Sheni. He's chayiv karis. So the Ram adds a few words here to explain the difference. The Ram says k'shaya tamei over there for chok Pesach Rishon lo asa Sheni. Ain al chayiv karis lefi she niftar mi Pesach Rishon. Underline those three words. In other words, we look in the Torah. Now at some point the Rambam gets kind of mechanical, technical. So I don't know. It's a little bit anticlimactic. So the technical part of this Rambam is that when you look at the parasha of Karis in Karban Pesach, the Torah removes Tomei and Derech Rechoka from that parasha. So therefore, Tomei B'derech Rechoka, even though he has the possibility to avail himself of Pesach Sheni, but he was never included in Karis. That's the technical part. But the Lubdish part of this Rambam is Sheniftar mi Pesach Rishon. He was never obligated to Pesach Rishon. He's a Gavra Labar Chiyuva. In other words, in the Taz's frame of reference, a Tomei B'derech Rechoka is like an Onei, who's not even Chayiv in Tefillah. Here he's not Chayiv in Karban Pesach. Oh, but if kishes shogag o nenas Pesach Rishon v'loas es hasheni chayv kares, and then the Rambam again gets a little bit technical. He says ki loshen haTorah kol mishal ohoya v'derech kol is chayv kares. So again, we can't be mechayv in kares because he was an honest. But if we give him another chance to bring the Karban Pesach, he doesn't avail himself. Then he becomes amazing and he's chayv kares. So the difference is the following: the Torah says that if you didn't bring, you were obligated in Pesach Rishon, and you didn't bring the Pesach Rishon, then the Torah says the following. You have an opportunity to bring the Pesach Sheni. We're not going to be Mechayev you Kares for the Pesach Rishon because you didn't have the opportunity to bring it. But now we gave you another opportunity, then you're amazing, you're Chayev Kares. Says the Rambam, that's because you were included in the Parsha of Kares. The Torah said that anyone who's obligated the Karban Pesach and didn't bring the Karban Pesach, he's chayav kares. Masha Enkein, in the case of the Tomei B'derech Rechoka, the Rambam is learning pshat that he was never the chiyuv in the parasha of Karban Pesach, which includes within it the violation that generates kares. He was never included in that parasha. Is therefore he was never chayav in the Karban Pesach to begin
with. It's almost like a drasha where we're taking the kares, we can't apply in the sugya of the parasha, we've got to apply it to the other.
The
Indian
kind of thing.
In your dessert, it must be a little bit.
Yeah,
that's the closest one we can get to.
Right. Okay. So that I thought was pretty fascinating.
So that would be somebody, a kid that was less than Shonen to be a Gadol, and became a Gadol.
Between the two Korban Pesach.
Right.
So even though he's Chayav and Korban Pesach Sheni, they brought a Korban for him, or they didn't bring a Korban?
They didn't bring a Korban.
So he's Chayav and Pesach Sheni, I think, in that case. But he would not be Chayav Koris then, because he wasn't a Baruch Hu.
Exactly.
Right, you have to check. There's a lot.
Alright,
here's Osek Mitzvah Padman. So we have about 10 minutes left. So instead of photocopying this for you, because the Chodesh can cut this, I'm just going to go on and on and on. But this is easy. This is easy. There's a Ritva in Sukkah. And there's a lot to say about this Ritva. What does the Ritva say? The Ritva holds, this is a Daf Chaf Hei, this is the sugya that Sam was referring to before, about Shluchei Mitzvah Ptur Min HaSukkah. He says the following. And this is the Ritva's language. It says, Mishum da osik mitzvah potu mitzvah, v'teima. He says, what's going on over here? I don't get it. If we're talking about Yef shal kaim shteyan, if he can't do both mitzvahs, right? So he says, if he can't do both mitzvahs, why do I need a drosha? The Gemara learns it from Shittu Veisech, blah, blah, blah. That Osik Mitzvah is part of it. What would you say? He should drop the mitzvah and he's obligated in the second mitzvah?
Well, he
says, Tema. He says, Shluche Mitzvah part of it, Tema. If he's Vadai Lo Omru, it doesn't make any sense to say that Osik Mitzvah is part of the mitzvah Bishay Ef Shal Kaim Shteyem. If it's Ef Shal Kaim Shteyem, it's Pshita. You know what I'm saying? What's the Chiddush here? Sure. The Ritva is looking for a Chiddush and also makes a point. Like, what would you have said if you didn't have the Drush? The Chazal learned from a Drush.
Yeah, right.
No, what is the Chiddush in this Drush? Man is Chiddush b'Drush
in Zu. If you don't have to stop this one.
Like, for example, if he's Ba'odo b'Sukkah, so it means he's part of all the mitzvahs, because at that moment he's being mekaymis. Osh etfilin munah, he's got tefillin on his head. Osh mis adi vitzitzis. Yesh mezuzah bepischa, Ribbono Shel Olam. It's obviously he's chayiv in all the mitzvahs. You can't say that because I have a mezuzah, I'm part in all mitzvah Torah.
Is that Osei?
Correct. He says, Umash omer b'shomer aveda, shepotel isoseis putu liyoni, hayu b'shosh menayres aveda metabel bo. So he's osik b'mitzvah. You want him to drop that? He doesn't have to drop that. That's why the Gemara says that putu Rabbi Yosef is lo shchiyah. That's why Rabbi doesn't accept that to define his status as shomer sochar. Nu, came unto lo miftar ela biodo, by possible relation only biodo be osik b'mitzvah. Right, it can't be that just because he has a mezuzah he's potter, but he's doing osik. Is lomeli krop shita, lomi aniach mitzvah zum ipnei mitzvah cheres. The Ritva is very logical. Yesh lomar hakam mashmalon, dafil boy lo aniach mitzvah zu. I'm going to add a word harishona. Lasos mitzvah cheres, ein rishus biyada. The salket aitachamina, the iftar ehu the iftar minei. Which I think means temporary suspension, right? Aval boy le mishvak ha ulemevad idach harishus biyada. For whatever reason, he decides. You know, he's the chacham from the manishtan. He decides he wants to be mekayim the second mitzvah, drop the first mitzvah. Kamashvul and Tosfos says came in the patur ha acheres harehi etzlo kidomer shel rishus. And here's the clincher. The also laniach mitzvos of the davish rishus. In other words, he's learning negation. I would have thought it's suspension. And okay, you're part of the second mitzvah. You want to do the second mitzvah? Go ahead, tovalav bro. No, kamash malan. That as far as the second mitzvah, he's not a baruch yuv at all. And now he spends the entire remainder, you know, the balance of this article to prove that it's against the Arza Ruah and it's against the Toysus in Sukkah, and he goes on and on and on. He says, Venira, Sharitva Sover, Sheha Mitzvah Shepturim Milas Sosa, meaning the second mitzvah, Misbatelis. He's using Vittel. For who Dover Shal Rishus? Lumaso against the Ritva, Shari Shonim Sover, Shah Mitzvah Shni Adain Chala, meaning he's obligated. I will put to Mila Sosa. Right now he's in a suspension of Ptur. Came with the Osik Bekiv Mitzvah Rishonah. Allah Mitzvah Rishonah, Eidim Mitzvah Teles. And therefore you wouldn't say it's awesome for him to fulfill the second Mitzvah, and it's a Dom Rishus. And now, yeah, what do you say, Alan?
Yeah, what I'm saying, but when they say, if Shalakayim, is a perfect example of where you stop the first one, you go to the second one.
Right, so he, I'm saying he rejects the concept of the Yef Shalakayim Shteyim. If it's the Yef Shalakayim Shteyim, he says that's Pshita. He can't justify why we need a drasha in the case of someone who has no possibility of fulfilling the second Chiyuv unless he drops the first one. That he rejects. So it's Yef Shalakayim Shteyim. But he adds another proviso. It's got to be that he's Osik B'mitzvah. So all the Rishonim say the Kaav Amina was that even though he's Osik B'mitzvah, let him do both mitzvahs. Does one mitzvah with his right hand and one with his left. The Ritva doesn't hold like that. The Ritva says that the Kaav Mashmal in here is that the second mitzvah is not Chal at all. And there ain't no Chiyuv. And therefore it's Rishus. And therefore it's us.
Even if you could be Mekayim and go back to the first push, I'd be Mekayim.
Awesome. You're Osik B'mitzvah. It's an insult to the mitzvah. I'm just saying Balabatish. And therefore don't even dream of dropping the mitzvah. The other Rishonim hold no. It's Ef Shalakayim Shteyim. So I need a Chiddush in the Torah that I don't have to be a juggler.
Right. Okay.
But now he goes ahead, and this is I'm very impressed by this move. There's a question about someone who ate matzah when he was potter from the mitzvah of matzah. For example, he's eaten cholim, eaten shoti. Remember this? So he ate it while he was a shoti. The achak nisrape is, it says in the Rambam Shulchan Aruch, and so forth and so on, is chayav lecho lefi sha'osa achila rishona ha'isa b'shosha ya potter min ha'mitzvahs. He had a dinner status of a shoti, the shoti is potter min ha'mitzvahs. So Chabot said, which tzad in the Chakir does that sound like? Are you with me? In other words, are we saying that the Shota is not chayav in the mitzvah, but it's not that the mitzvah is completely batal and mevutal? From the fact that now we're saying that when it became
it was batal and mevutal.
Exactly. So in other words, what he's trying to do here is, having seen the Ritva, that the Ritva wants to say that in some cases when it says you're part of a mitzvah, it goes as far as to say that you're a lava chiyuva. A good parallel to this, or shall we say a precedent to this, would be the case of an eaten shota, where if he ate the matzah when he was a shota, it's not the pshat that the Torah couldn't expect a shota to eat matzah. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Afkos Achiyu. The Gav is a lot of Achiyuva. So let's say if a boy would become Bar Mitzvah on the Leil of Pesach, if you all like Neis Leis, according to that Shita. So he ate the matzah before the Neis Leis of his Bar Mitzvah, he would have to eat it a second time. And the same thing applies to Cherish Mishota, because it's a lot of Achiyuva. The Ritva went ahead, and he said that all Sekhmer Mitzvah is a lot of Achiyuva as far as other mitzvahs are concerned. All right, Rabbi Moshe, we'll finish this up tomorrow. He has another couple of beautiful examples of this Hakira. No, I just realized we're not going to finish this tomorrow.
What about the case of Sukkah about Chosim being Chosim Kishma? The Tana there, he was the exact, I'm capable of doing it.
And what did he do? He
says that Kishma, he was a Chosim that night.
Oh, and I suspect it was you are on.
Let's think.
If you're holding that since he's Torah, there's a din of Torah. So listen, if we're going to say the Torah that means you're a lot more Chiyuva, so what do you say? I think what he's saying is that I am a bar Chiyuva. That Tirda for you is not the same as Tirda for me. I don't know. You have to think about it. I don't know.